The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
You're listening to America Speaks Out on the Flypod.com New Media Network. I'm your host, Gary Puckett, and today we're coming to you from our new Westchester studio. If you're listening online right now, that's terrific. Or perhaps you're catching us through one of our many syndication partners or hyper-syndication platforms nationwide. Our media distribution system is designed for portable media devices, so you can take us with you. We are living proof of media versatility in this new content-driven world. Regardless of all that, we're very glad to have you listening in. Visit our website directly when you have a chance, www.theflypod.com. We have a nationwide network of 35 show hosts, and we podcast a wide variety of programs daily to thousands of small communities across the United States, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. When it comes to the media, we are what's next. Once again today, my guests are Alex Parnuk and Marianne Stanley, frequent contributors here on our network. On this episode of America Speaks Out, we will have a general discussion on the subject of poverty, certainly a hot-button topic for many people, and a very intricate social problem that we suffer from here in the United States, and I'm sure globally as well. What I'm hoping to discover as a result of this show is how the positions and opinions are different between one with a liberal point of view and one with a conservative point of view in this episode of America Speaks Out. Alex, Marianne, welcome back to Westchester Studio.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Now, for the benefit of new listeners, I think it is appropriate to mention that, Alex, you are a pretty conservative guy, while Marianne, you are a much more liberal-minded individual. Let me ask you both, is that a fair description?
Absolutely is.
Accurate.
Okay, we're on board. Well, as we begin our discussion on the topic of poverty, I'd like to begin by asking each of you, according to the U.S. government, what constitutes a person living in poverty today? Who would like to go first?
Ladies first. Or do you want?
Well, according to the government, at least in 2009, the poverty level was anyone earning under $21,954 a year for a family of four. They were at or below the poverty level. I'm sure that number has changed by now, but that is well above what people make if they are earning minimum wage in jobs today, if both parents were even working full-time. So the poverty level, we have right now so many people in poverty. We have over 44 million Americans in poverty, and that's, I think, a criminal situation.
Alex?
First of all, criminal. How do you define that it's a criminal situation? Criminal situation is a violation of law. What law are we violating here when we have people that decide that or circumstance allows them to be poor? What violation of law is that?
Well, I see what you're saying about criminal and law, but some things can be criminal that don't have laws. It was criminal that they were lynching black people, and at the time, black people were not seen as equal to white people. So, I mean, criminal.
But that was a crime, murder. Okay. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, in this respect, how do you equate that to poverty?
Okay. I'm going to go back for a second, though, and clarify criminal. It was criminal, for instance, that blacks were kept in slavery for so long. It was criminal, even though it wasn't against the law. So what I'm saying is it's criminal in the sense that it's beneath us to allow that many Americans to be in poverty, to suffer, to not have enough to eat or shelter or adequate whatever they might need. It's pretty criminal when we're still the wealthiest country in the entire world.
Okay, so you use the money parameter, and that's going up because if for a family of four today, it's a little higher. It's $23,050. And generally speaking, according to the figures I saw, the figures I have are higher. It's about 46.2 million or 50%, 15% of the population. But interesting thing is, like Gary asked, the definition. I mean, the government has like 33 different parameters to define poverty. And basically, again, it comes down to that income level. And one of the things I found in my study of this subject was the very fact that what they did originally was they used a thing called a qualifier, okay? And there was a fellow by the name back in the 50s by the name of Orshansky, and he was a government economist. And he came up with a formula, and he says that, well, let's see, poor people on average use about one-third of their income for food. Well, that's just not the case today, but they're still using these old data sets, which has a tendency, I think, of actually elevating the level of poverty that we really have in the United States. Today, from the figures that I found, people really use maybe about 13% of their income for food. So you're talking about a disparity of almost double when it comes to actually defining what poverty is in the United States. And then I found a graph, and it talks about that. It was an article by a fellow by the name of Dylan Matthews back in July of 12, and he had a whole article on poverty talking about it. And he had a little nice little graph, and if you go back to 59, it was up in excess of over 20% of the population. And then it kind of came down, and it sat around. It went, popped up to 15, came back down 11, but it's been relatively stable. And the reason I mention this is the very fact this is one of these the Washington Post writers, and he made a statement which I found absolutely mind-boggling. He says, now let me quote him, "Contrary to what you may have heard, the best evidence indicates that the war on poverty made a real and lasting difference. And as I look in his graph, there has been no change in the last." So how can you have a real, this is the problem with liberalism. They see this real and lasting difference, and the war on poverty hasn't solved anything.
Okay, you know, and I'm not going to dispute the figures that you have or even the quotes that you've got there, but I think what we're looking at in poverty, if you and I at least are going to discuss this topic, we need to define then what do we mean by poverty. And to me, poverty means people who do not have enough. They don't have enough to eat. They don't have air conditioning when the heat is soaring over 120 degrees in their homes. They don't have heat in the winter. People are dying or suffering or getting sick because they cannot provide for themselves. That's what I'm talking about. When one in six Americans knows hunger as a regular daily or almost daily feeling that they have to carry around, and hunger hurts. Hunger is painful. If you've ever been really hungry, and to think that one in six of us feels that or has to live with that, it's pretty tragic considering that a lot of those are children, and children can't learn on an empty stomach.
That's funny that you mention that because, you know, you say one in six poor, not hungry and everything else like this, and you say didn't have air conditioning and all that. I recently ran across a Heritage Foundation study, and it was used by a fellow by the name of Walter Williams, who's an economist. And, you know, just looking at some of the interesting data points they had there, 42% of poor households actually own their own homes. 80% of poor households have air conditioning, which disputes the number that you have. And in 1970, only 36% of the entire U.S. population enjoyed air conditioning. So maybe we're talking about old data. 92% of poor households have a microwave. Nearly three-fourths have a car or truck, and 31% have two or more cars or trucks. Nearly two-thirds have cable or satellite TV. Two-thirds have at least one DVD player, and 70% have a VCR. Half have personal computers, and one in seven have two or more computers. And access to computers nowadays in like the beautiful libraries that we have in this world is available for everybody. More than half of the poor families with children have a video game system, such as Xbox or PlayStation. 43% have internet access. One-third have a widescreen plasma or LCD TV, and one-fourth have a digital video recording system, such as TiVo. To me, that doesn't seem like poverty. It seems like an ability to function as what would be considered normal in the United States. So how do you answer that?
Well, let me ask you this for each of you. What do you see as the biggest single, if you had to narrow it down, what do you see as the biggest single cause of poverty in America? What do you think the driving force is?
Okay, well, let me answer one thing first. First of all, there's something I would like to have a chance to say back as far as what Alex is saying about
Sure.
the Heritage Foundation.
Sure.
The Heritage Foundation, in case some of the listeners don't know, the Heritage Foundation is a conservative think tank. And they have someone there called Robert Rector, who basically came out and said that, you know, you can hardly call it poverty when we're spending $168 per person per day on people in poverty. So we're hearing these kinds of things. They are not factual. And it's kind of frustrating when you hear a list like that. I'm like, well, geez, I don't even have an Xbox 350. I don't even have TiVo. TiVo. So I think that, you know, running a list like that without telling the rest of the story can be really misleading and can make people say, geez, you know, yeah, that's not poverty. But to go back to your question, Gary, leaning factor. Oh, by the way, let me finish one last thing. Instead of $168 a day, the people in poverty are living on $25 a day. And nobody can really live on that. So when we're looking at the cause of poverty, I think it's multifactorial. I think one of the big things now is the loss of jobs as they've been offshored. I think that's huge because we have now a lot of the middle class and even upper middle class people who have been shoved into poverty and into the food pantry lines. But I don't think that's the major cause of poverty. I think the major cause of poverty is our really lousy attitude about each other and not caring enough for each other. I think that's got to be the underlying cause back then and now.
The data sets from Heritage was taken from national polls from various government agencies. I just feel that the problem, basically and simply put, is the very fact that how it is we define these things. When you start up with an income threshold of, say, in this particular case, we had, for a family of four, it was $23,050. The point to make is the very fact that that figure does not include the types of subsistence that we are providing. I mean, it's a terrible figure to say that we have in four family living on $20,000, but they don't really live on $20,000. If you look at government assistance, we have just in the Department of United States Department of Agriculture, okay, they have got 15 specific domestic food nutrition assistance programs. And I mean, this is phenomenal. I mean, SNAP. SNAP is the what we used to have for welfare. Okay, now they call it some kind of fancy name, nutrition assistance program. Excuse me, supplemental nutrition assistance program, a national school lunch program, national school fresh fruits and vegetable program, school breakfast program, special milk program, team nutrition, WIC, which is a very big program and helps a lot of moms because of the very fact they have infants, children, which is an exceptionally good program, senior farmers market nutrition program, WIC Farmers Market Nutrition Program, Summer Food Program, Child and Adult Food Program, Food and Assistance for Disaster Relief, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, Commodity Supplemental Food Program, and Food Distribution Program. Now, that's just one federal agency providing assistance to those that are qualified, that would qualify under the numerical qualified being poor. I happen to have what I call real-world information, meaning the kinds of things that I see. And when I gave you that list and everything, let me add one more thing on there. We just, through the organization I belong to, we did some business here where we provided clothing and toys for kids and families not too long ago. And those families are brought to us by a list from an agency that determines these people are in poverty. Let me tell you something. There wasn't one of those families that did not have a cell phone. And a lot of those people had even better cell phones than I had. I mean, they had the smartphones. So if there is money in a household to do those kinds of things, I think the problem with poverty today is that the people that are in poverty, one is a problem with education because they're not aware or never been taught how to use their money efficiently. So if you go out and spend something for $100 versus you could have probably got that for $25, I mean, I use the example of myself. I got a junky old Virgin mobile phone. It runs me maybe about $15 a month instead of a smartphone, which has to cost at least $40 or $50 a month. That's just utilizing your resources better. And the problem we have and how we've gotten into this poverty mess is the very fact that the people in poverty are not educated or haven't been educated sufficiently by our school systems and our support systems, this grandiose government that we have that does everything underneath the sun for us, to educate them how to use their money efficiently. And that's where the problem is. The problem isn't in that we don't have enough money. That's where the problem is.
I would have to disagree with you for a number of reasons. First of all, it's not necessarily so that, well, you're not going to find, for instance, all poor people have cell phones. First of all, although you can get super, super cheap cell phones also, people do need to be in touch with people, whether they had the home phone.
The government's giving away now your cell phones. You do realize that. If they're coming to the income threshold, the government is paying for a cell phone, and they're also paying for broadband.
So, I understand some of that.
Our
largesse is pathetic in the sense that we have so many people. You can't point your finger at 45 million people and say, geez, they're all just lazy, they're not good.
Wait a minute. I did not call them lazy. Excuse me.
Okay, but let me
finish.
One
thing I will not call a poor person is lazy.
I didn't interrupt you, Alex.
I'm sorry, but I mean, you can't get away with that.
There's a book that's out by sociologist Martin Gillens, Why Americans Hate Welfare. And they say that people do want to see increased public spending to fight poverty. But at the same time, they are opposed to welfare. And the reason is that we have had so much media demonizing welfare recipients as being lazy and unworthy, people who don't really need it. They think that blacks are lazy or people are undeserving or, like you said, they can just manage their money better. There are so many factors. The great philosopher Nietzsche said that. He said, for each situation, you've got different circumstances. We shouldn't be lumping people together.
Well, this may sound like a crazy simple question, but do you believe people who are in the ranks of the impoverished, let's call them, can they work their way out of poverty? Can that happen?
Some.
How,
sure.
How doable is that?
See, and I'm going to go back to Nietzsche again. I found him to be, and I used to teach philosophy. To me, the very fact that we try to lump people and categorize them, throw them all in the same box, doesn't work any more than you're the same as even your own family members. We're all so different. Our circumstances are all so different.
Oh, I guarantee I'm different than the rest of my family.
I just love your liberal ethos. Oh.
There you go. It's not a liberal. You know, when I guess I still take objection to, in some degree, to even those kinds of classifications, because to me, we're all human beings. We're part of the same family. We all are each other's keeper. We all have to care about each other. We all have times when we are at ebb or flow and times when we fall off the bandwagon and we need a helping hand. And so, you know, to me, we don't have that kind of a
So you see the assistance aspect of poverty and trying to address poverty in our country. Do you see it as more or less a temporary hand up to get them to a point where they can make it on their own?
Well, here's the thing. It is, if you're looking at welfare, the welfare system itself, it is temporary. You're only allowed to have it for a very limited amount of time. So when people think people just are these welfare moms and they're on it, they stay on it forever, that's a falsehood. That they can't. They are limited now in time. So, and as far as a temporary hand up, some people will never get up and never be able to stay up for a number of reasons, and they're not all of their own making. Women, even today, get 77% on the dollar of what men make with the same backgrounds. There are multifaceted situations, people being stuck with children to take care of when somebody, one of the parents abandons them. You can lose your job, and at the same time, you may have a health problem. You may not be able to work full time. You may not be able to work at all. We don't have a safety net, and we also don't have equality in education. We have neighborhoods that have lousy schools based on property taxes. Our system of funding schools is pathetic. And so what you have is people who never get the education, never have hope, live in neighborhoods without hope, who don't have a way to get up and stay up. And then they're surrounded by people like a lot of us who really don't give a fig if they're going to suffer and if they need a helping hand and if they can be helped along the way. And, you know, most people want to be productive. If they could make a living, they would love it. And so what I really have a problem with, I suppose, is just the fact that they're being judged so harshly by people who have never been there.
Well, are they judged, or is it that the government has placed them in that position, where is the government parameters that have established this? You know, you keep saying, you know, there's this problem, and we need to address it. I mean, let me tell you, this problem has been addressed since back in 1965 when we had the war on poverty, okay? And depending on whosoever figures you reach, we've spent anywhere from $13 trillion to $15 trillion, and then the state governments have spent a whole bunch more, and we have not solved this problem, because it tells me that we're throwing money at something is not going to be the solution. And then you also say, well, they only get so much money and everything else like this, and that, you know, they just need a helping hand. Well, the problem is liberal legislation up through the years, including this war on poverty, that is continually trying to tweak these programs. Like I say, with 33 different definitions of what poverty is, with 15 different programs in just USDA, and you look at what's actually going on, family that's in poverty, a woman that, say, is working at a menial job or a job that is only paying X number of dollars, if she has four kids and she's allowed to make $20,000, our system, the liberal ethos system that has created this welfare state, turns around and will tell her that she can't get any more support because of the fact that she earns too much money. We need to help people and change the system, and the system has been geared to maintaining people in that level of poverty, and you can't deny that.
Are both of you in favor of having a work element, wherever it is truly feasible, a work element attached to this public assistance? I mean, does that...
Not necessarily.
When you've got a single mom that's got two or three kids sitting at home and she's trying to keep that family together, she can't go out and work. However, the minute those children start going to school, okay, and so they're in the school system, they're getting the lunch program. That's why I'm saying this money factor is not a real number. When you start talking about, I agree with the writer in that it's not one third, it's actually more like 15%, which is half of that. So our numbers are all skewed and we're totally messing up how we graduate our people that are in need. But what's going on is that mom, when the kids start going to school, she goes back to work. Well, the minute she goes back to work, and if she makes too much money, she gets kicked off of the system. That's not right. Instead of incrementally assisting her to advance, all we've done in this liberal ethos that we have coming out of Washington through the legislation that the Democrats have been passing, which includes this health care that's going to go on, but we won't go there. But all we're doing is keeping people in poverty because we set the rules and the parameters. We told that woman that if you make more than $20,000 a year and if you make $21,000, bingo, you can't get any more help.
Well, I just want to interject here. I think that over the decades, I don't think we can say that it's been purely the Democrats. I think this is – they're all complicit, both parties. It's just been decades of perhaps –
But it's the liberal thought process.
Well, perhaps.
Here's the case in point. You and I have mentioned it once before, Marianne. You know, the philosophical difference between conservative and liberal is the liberal will turn around and just keep feeding the people and give them the fish every day, day after day after day, versus the conservative philosophy is to help that family, to teach them how to fish so they can take care of themselves long-term.
Okay.
Versus,
well,
not what we have today.
Well, let me say, I don't believe that's the way it is at all. And I don't think liberals want to just get, nobody in their right mind wants to just throw money.
That's what they're doing.
Nobody in their right mind wants to just throw money at people, but they have a reason for putting in a safety net. And that's why people are against poverty and want to do things that fight poverty. Now, you and I could probably sit down and come up with a solution better than the congressmen do.
Well, that's a wonderful place to transition into the final moments of our show here, because I would like to present this question to each of you. I'd kind of like to get a feel from each of you as to what you believe could be perhaps a train of action to significantly reduce poverty in America. I mean, do you have any specific ideas that you think might be new, innovative, or different, or otherwise work to truly solve it? I mean, what direction can we go? Who would like to go first? Because I'd like to use these final moments to get your opinions on this.
Marianne,
work to solve this.
Marianne used the analogy of the net, okay? From my point of view as a conservative, what we've done is we've gathered in those poor fish and we keep them in that net, versus I believe that you should have that safety net so that when that person falls, we give them a little bit of extra help to get them back out of it, versus our society today and our most of the legislation that is passed is geared to keep them within the confines of that net in poverty.
Okay, and I don't see it that way. I would agree that we shouldn't keep people in a net, and I would agree that we should help people who fall. Let me just say I think there is a way out, but it's going to take a comprehensive look at this entire situation. How do we get here? Where do we go from here? My view has always been, and I used to work in a homelessness clinic in Tucson, Arizona. My idea has always been we need to sit down with these people. If they don't like being where they are, and I would guess the majority don't, you test them for their aptitudes. You get put into place training programs that match their aptitudes. You make sure we have jobs here. You can't ask people to be working and supplying their family with what they need when the jobs aren't here, period. We've lost millions and millions of jobs, and we're still pointing our finger at people who have lost their homes and who are on welfare or in food kitchens now who never used to be. So again, you look at the whole thing comprehensively, you put rational people looking at it in a rational group, trying to figure out rational ways to assist those of us who are equally human, have the same human needs as we have, and quit being so judgmental against them.
I agree. Jobs is really important. But again, qualify that with how you apply those jobs.
Mary Ann, Alex, I want to thank each of you for coming on my show today. And I would also point out to our listeners that any American citizen is welcome to come on a future episode of America Speaks Out and express their own opinions and ideas about any particular topic of the day. The FlyPod Network is a neutral forum, so regardless of your point of view or political affiliation, it makes no difference to us. So to be on the show, contact us by email back in our control studio, shout@theflypod.com. Regardless of where you're contacting us from in the country, we will have you on the show and podcast it directly back into your own local community. Well, that is my show for today from Westchester Studio. I'm your host, Gary Puckett, coming free and clear through the New Media Network program feeds of www.theflypod.com. My guests have been Mary Ann Stanley and Alex Parnuk. Until next time, thank you for joining us and listening in here on America Speaks Out.